Hello, I'm Steve Caldwell, and welcome to the Manager Mojo podcast, where we use our mojo to create inspired leaders who are transforming people and the world around them. Now, let's get started by recognizing someone who's doing something good. Today, everyone, I want to recommend and tell you what makes me feel good is related to food. I just recently had an awesome meal at a place called Lucille's Barbecue in the Phoenix area. They're located in Tempe, in the Tempe Marketplace. If you're ever around there, you've got to check it out. My favorite meal there is baby back ribs. They have the best baby backs I've had in many, many years. So I feel pretty darn good. I had some great ribs. So Lucille's, thank you so very much for making my day.
Oh, I feel good. I knew that I would not.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Manager Mojo podcast, Steve Caldwell, and I'm thrilled we have another outstanding guest to talk to today. Our guest today is Chris Edmonds. Now, Chris is the founder and CEO of Purposeful Culture Group. He's a speaker, author, an executive consultant. He's had a 15-year career leading and managing teams, and he's also worked with clients in industries including automotive, banking, financial services, government, hospitality, frankly, just about everybody. Chris has helped clients consistently boost their customer satisfaction and employee engagement by 40% or more and increase their profits by 30%. He's the co-author of 6 books, including Leading at a Higher Level with Ken Blanchard and many others. And if all of that was not enough, he's also an accomplished musician and performer and provides guitar, banjo, and vocals for Greystone Records recording artist Jones and Rain. And he's had 2 singles from their 2009 debut album that made the Billboard Country charts. So country is something I love, Chris. And so I just want to welcome you to the Manager Mojo podcast today.
Well, Steve, thanks so much for the opportunity. And you did my intro just like I wrote it. Thank you.
Well, it's a heck of an intro, I'll tell you that, and a great background, and we're really pleased that you're going to share your wisdom with us today. But before we jump into questions on engagement and all those kind of cool things, tell us what cool things that you're doing right now.
Well, there's the life stuff and the family stuff, and there's the band, the music kind of life. There's some cool author stuff. So we're not quite. I'm in Denver, in the mountains west of Denver. So we're not quite to 100 inches of snow like the East Coast and the Eastern Seaboard has faced. But we're going to get 2 feet of snow over Saturday, Sunday. So that's pretty much my weekend that's coming up.
Nice.
The band is starting to ramp up. We get very, very busy in spring and summer, so we've got some fun gigs coming up and learning some music for some wedding clients, which is just a ball. And my most recent book, The Culture Engine, I'm excited. I'll be headed next month to Austin, to South by Southwest, and presenting on The Culture Engine and signing it on Saturday, the 14th of March. So just way too much fun over here.
That is awesome. Congratulations on the new book, and perhaps you can share a little bit of that with us as well today. Well, thank you for being here, and let's begin though by let's have you define what you think about whenever you think about culture in a company.
Yeah, it's a great question, because so many of the leaders that I've been able to work with over the past 15, 20 years have that same question. They have never really been asked to pay attention to culture. They may be aware of it. They may have had some great bosses that were very good at proactively managing the culture of the organization, but most leaders, from team standpoint to region standpoint to global organizations, they've never been asked to really proactively manage culture. So it's a bit of a gap. And so as I begin to speak to them about the nature of the work environment, I basically coach senior leaders and team leaders and everybody in between, anyone with formal leadership responsibility, to say you need to pay as much attention to how the team is operating as it is to how it's performing. And of course, us classic Western thinkers, we've got dashboards like crazy that'll focus upon, you know, sales per hour or market share or widgets per hour or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we pay much less active attention to just exactly what's the experience that employees have. Are they feeling trusted? Are they feeling respected? Are they treated with dignity? Because that trickles into the customer relationships. It trickles into the leadership influencing ability. It's a pretty powerful piece. So from a bumper sticker standpoint, it's the health of the work environment so that people feel trusted, honored, respected.
So it's you describe it as the work environment, whether people really feel that trust and respect. Am I hearing that correctly? Or are they experiencing?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Cool. So that leads me to ask you from a standpoint of how do you believe that people, especially in leadership positions, how are they going to impact such things? Because that seems to a lot of executives, they think about culture and they think, oh, that's touchy feely stuff. And
totally
so tell me, you know, how do you get past that little hurdle right off the bat?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest hooks is exactly what you described, which is that being proactive about culture and creating a healthy culture boosts performance by 30 to 35% within 12 months. Now, you put that out there, and there's not a leader on the planet that won't be very intrigued at that. They'll not know exactly what is going to be required of them. So that's part of the education that I have to do, because in essence, I'm going to have to help them see their jobs differently. I'm going to have to ask them to invest their time differently, to engage in conversations differently, to pay attention to what they're paying attention to change what they invest their messaging in and their kind of metrics ability in, to kind of shift to maybe some different metrics like turnover, like exit interviews, like the degree of proactive problem solving. Those are indications that are black and white measures that can give leaders an undeniable truth about the fact that their organizational culture might actually make things a lot more difficult for people to A, get along, B, work cooperatively, C, respond nimbly when a customer needs something. So you've hit the nail on the head from a standpoint of leaders are intrigued at that productivity boost. They're intrigued at the results gain. They're very intrigued at a profit gain, if that so happens to be a metric, which for some organizations it's not. In nonprofits, it's a different kind of a piece. In government agencies, it's a different kind of a piece.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at profitability, and you look at results, and you look at performance, there's a lot of folks that are going to be interested in two of those three.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, I can just hear them now. You know, when you talk about increasing profits and by 30% or more, I can hear them like, oh, yeah, give me some of that culture business.
Yeah.
I want some of that.
Yeah.
And they're ready to jump at it. But my suspicion is that the first thing that they want to do is to establish a bunch of analytical measurements toward that goal instead of really looking inside the process. Would I be correct in saying that? Or
boy, exactly so, Steve. Exactly so. And one of the things that's also very attractive is to kind of do the managing by announcements thing, to say, here's what our culture's going to be. And they've got the best of intentions in there. Yeah, okay, in some cases. The other piece is that they'll delegate it to someone who doesn't really, who isn't the face of the organization, which senior leaders are, which a team leader is in a team of five or six, you're mm-hmm. the face of that organization.
Absolutely.
And so you can't, you if you delegate it, you're going to get exactly what you deserve. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is I've got to help them realize that if they craft an environment where people feel like they're paid attention to, like they're valued, their contributions are honored, like they are part of something bigger than making someone money, which is kind of that purpose drive. There's some really neat elements here. And in the culture engine, where I go with this is to say, you all have to craft a different covenant. You have to craft a different agreement mm-hmm. with the leaders that report to you and with those frontline employees and everybody in between. And so I speak about an organizational constitution, and everybody gets it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, what's in it? Well, it's a purpose, a present-day reason for being that is beyond making money. Yes, we know you all have to make money, but that doesn't inspire 90% of your workforce. It, in fact, doesn't inspire many of your customers. So that kind of service to others purpose is vital. Values. We're going to define what a good citizen smells like around here. We're going to define it in behavioral terms. Mm-hmm. So you can actually get to the metrics that you just spoke of mm-hmm. that are going to help you be able to validate whether or not someone's really honoring those values and behaviors day to day in every interaction. And then the last two pieces are the pieces that often are all-encompassing for many leaders, which is strategies and goals. And mm-hmm. it's not to discount strategies and goals, because performance and profitability and being able to keep the doors open is a certainly very important outcome, but it ain't the only thing. If you really want to craft an environment where people are applying discretionary energy towards goals, towards their team members, towards their customers.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I know that, you know, people are hearing this, and I just want to set the stage, because it seems to me that 20 years ago, whenever we looked at business and we mm-hmm. talked about business, you know, we pretty much had an idea of the way that leadership and leaders look. They were nearly always mm-hmm. More what I would call dictatorial. They were mm-hmm. top mm-hmm. down, direct down, and things like culture and that kind of stuff, they really weren't too involved in that. Is that a fair statement?
I think it is, and I think what is interesting is that, you know, we've seen historically organizations that really were great places to work, organizations that were intentional about their work environment, the quality of that work environment, the experience that employees had, they were really few and far between. But
they were.
Harvard Business Review mm-hmm. that would do, you know, spotlights on SAS and WD-40 and most recently Zappos, Southwest. So at Starbucks, you kind of hear the same core 10. And it's a very small percentage. And Wall Street, unfortunately, doesn't pay as much attention to culture quality, except when it leads to the performance, the profits, the stock gains if you're publicly held. So we have this tendency, I think you're exactly right, where, you know, the boss, it was my way or the highway. That was kind of their mindset. And it was the only role models they had.
Right, exactly.
So it got reinforced for decades, just for decades. And yet when we think of bosses that loved us, God forbid, there was some fun. They delegated authority and responsibility to us, and baby, we lined up. We did not take that responsibility lightly. We kicked butt, and it was because of the relationship with those bosses. And if we think about how those bosses crafted the culture of the team, kind of the rules mm-hmm. of what a good citizen smells like around here, mm-hmm. they all did very similar things. And so as I was kind of working on this process over the past 15, 20 years, I went back to my best boss. And I've had a bunch of really good bosses, but there was one best boss that really heads and way above the rest, because he was so consistent, and he was a character, which I enjoyed, of course. But I spoke to people that worked alongside me under Jerry's tutelage, and we all just were so enamored of what he taught us, of what he let us do, of how we looked forward to going to work on a Monday morning. And the reality is that that's, you know, employee engagement is not at a peak today, which is, it impacts people's willingness to proactively problem solve with stuff they see. It impacts their willingness to engage in, you know, doing tasks that no one loves them for anymore. It's very interesting.
Yeah, that truly is. And I want to go back, and in a minute I'll go to it and talk about your best boss, and you used a term that I want to talk about in just a little bit. But before we do it, you introduced this term, employee engagement. And it's the latest rage. Everybody wants to talk about it in management. And frankly, I don't think they know what it means. And so you're an expert in that field. Could you define employee engagement for us in a way that is really tangible and we can all understand?
Absolutely. I hope I can. And Gallup has really Gallup's been the folks that really promoted this. It was 20 years ago when they began doing some hard numbers around when employees are engaged and the logical. It was their benefit to performance and to service, et cetera. And so that's what really inspired me. And as I work with leaders, what I'm hoping to get them to understand is that happy employees produce well, they serve well, and they solve problems for you. And so then they go to the, well, it's just positivity at work, or I can let's have more parties. Well, it's really about getting people who are talented, who have the skills that are needed for the tasks they face, that have a feeling that, this is where we get into some interesting ideas, because it's about internal motivation, internal feelings that these employees have, that they're trusted, honored, and respected consistently with every interaction, and what that causes them to do. And it's not just about being happy, although I've done some wonderful studies of positivity at work and positive psychology, and it's all very, very aligned to this idea that when you have engaged employees, they apply their skills willingly, they proactively solve problems that you may not even know exist. They serve remarkably well, and it's their almost championing of their team, of the organization, of their growth, and of the experience. And can you measure that? Well, you absolutely can, but you have to actually stop and engage people in conversation. So it's both productivity and proactive productivity, as well as them feeling trusted, honored, respected.
All very, very important parts to being a great leader, without question. Well, thank you. I think that does clear it up an awful lot for people to understand that engagement is certainly it's really been at its historical low based on the research that I've seen. Are you seeing the same thing?
I am. I think Blessing White did a study back in 2012 that indicated that only 45% of U.S. employees were satisfied with their job. And there's an organization that's now only about 3-4 years old called Tiny HR. And they're doing, well, they have a tool called Tiny Pulse, which is basically a day-to-day, moment-to-moment software tool that employees in your organization can basically, at the end of the day, kind of click, you know, was this a day that, you know, you were kind of happy with what you were doing? Did you contribute the way you wanted? There's some really cool stuff that they have. And they found that only 21% of employees, and this is over 500,000 employees, they found that only 21% felt that they were valued in the workplace today. And this was done in December of 2014. That's a shame.
Oh, my gosh. That's awful. And frankly, I think predictable from what I see.
Unfortunately so, yes, sir.
Because people just are, they're really not attuned to this idea of business relationships, in to put it a different way. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's exactly right, and it's very interesting to, you know, my vision for myself, and it's evolving, mm-hmm. but my purpose is evolving to helping leaders transform themselves from a task-driven competitive existence to a purpose-driven, values-aligned existence in service to others. And when people get that, then the relationships become the most important thing. And the reality is, you're exactly right, Steve, that all good things that happen in families and organizations and neighborhoods are because of good, foundational, respectful relationships. It's mm-hmm. not that complicated. But I don't think that leaders have had very good role models for a really long time.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree, and I, as a matter of fact, I talk about this all the time, that not only are the role models, have they been bad, and people tend to copy and duplicate what they observe, yeah. because they feel like if they don't, they're not going to get an opportunity to be promoted. And, you know, because let's face it, the human nature is that we tend to like people who are like us.
Exactly so.
And
exactly
so we don't really ever stop to say, well, you know, hey, let's look inside here. Let's look at me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
how am I treating people? And I know that a lot of people really struggle with this because they're fitting into a corporate world where, you know, they don't really care what the culture is. They just want to see what they can get out of you.
Yep.
And that's what they believe.
Well, and I think there's such power in the way cultures operate in nations, in neighborhoods, mm-hmm. in organizations, because those behaviors will get reinforced. Bad behaviors get tolerated. What could be, you know, behaviors you wouldn't be proud to have in the paper the next morning get reinforced and maybe even incented, and we end up with this philosophy that's really very self-centered. It is not about improving relationships. It's the I win, you lose kind of a dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a very, very interesting conversation with a client about their executive team. And I said, based on what you've told me in the interviews that I've had, they're not a team at all. They are simply an affiliated group of executives that battle for limited resources every day.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't have a viewpoint of we're leading this organization to this desired end. They're just battling, and it's all they know. And it crafts some very unfortunate dynamics and make a workplace very fun, if we can use that F word, the workplace. That would
right.
be a little bit more fun.
Yeah, yeah. We don't hear that much.
Anxiety-ridden.
Yeah, and at its worst, it can destroy your company. I heard a speaker myself recently talking about Kodak, and you know, Kodak invented digital photography, but they held on to the old way of doing things because of, as this speaker said, political pressure inside. The digital folks didn't have the political clout. And I think a lot of times we call it politics, but in reality, it's this battlefield for resources and to be heard.
Yeah.
And we take that and drive it right down to the employee.
Absolutely so, and there's pride and ego involved there that can drive some really dumb behaviors. And what has been so gratifying, Stephen, and this work to get that transformation started and to have leaders start to think, you know, I'm nothing without these people. And if these people chose to all kind of do X or Y or Z instead of A and B and C today, we're dead.
Right.
I'm dead.
Right.
And they have to get away. They're going to push themselves away from the spreadsheets and away from the keyboards and kind of just go talk to people and whatnot.
Imagine that.
I know it. I had a senior leadership team a while back where I said, you all have to go out and talk to these people. and I had the CFO push himself away from the big, beautiful, you know, kind of yacht-sized conference table we were all sitting around, and pushed himself away and says, I don't know that I want to know what they think. And I thought it was one of the most honest things I'd heard from him in a year. And I said, well, are you afraid they don't have an opinion? And everybody cracked up.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, it's 3 o'clock. Let's go out and watch them walk out to their cars and listen to what they say. And it's like, you've got a responsibility to not only inspire people's hands and their heads, so that knowledge and skills being applied.
Right.
But you also have a responsibility to engage people's hearts, which means you got to get into purpose, and you got to get into values, and you got to make this a little, at minimum, civil, and God forbid, maybe even validating. That's a pretty amazing work environment, and it's amazing. It comes across in results, in profits, in service, in employee health, their physical well-being.
Yep.
It's just amazing.
Which
it's
affects so absenteeism and all of the other things as well. There's money to be made everywhere you turn in that.
Absolutely.
That's awesome, Chris. I want to jump back for now to that term I told you I wanted to go back to, because you were describing your boss and you called him consistent. And, oh my gosh, I love that word. And a lot of people think of consistency as boring. And it's not at all, is it? So
it really isn't. It really isn't. And what's interesting is that consistency from leaders can actually look inconsistent. Because I remember some of the projects that I got, I really needed, he was pushing me very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a clue where to start. And I had some ideas, and so he didn't kick me out of the nest and make me fly or plummet. He grabbed me, he created a safety net, he connected me to some folks. Yet there were other projects at the same time where I had demonstrated skill, I'd been running, you know, national conferences, I'd been speaking in front of thousands of people. He said, kind of, what do you need from me? So what was interesting was that if you were looking from outside, it looked inconsistent. There were times when he was directing. There was times when he was kind of delegating. And what we all saw every day was he called us on our crap. He made us laugh. He kept us in tune to here's where we're going and here's why.
Right.
And here's the rules. We're gonna be nice to each other. We're gonna be civil to each other, and if you can't get along, by God, we're gonna wait and talk it out so you can't go home mad. It was the most proactive. He knew of issues, bubbling potential chasms before many of us did, because he was so in tune. And you described that as a vitally important skill of leaders, and I don't think it's a very well used skill.
It's ignored totally.
he was so consistent with giving us what we needed. He was a servant leader. He gave us what we needed, and he didn't let us off the hook. He pushed us. But I can't tell you, and you can probably sense it in my passion, love this guy, but I loved him when he corrected me. You know, it was the right thing to say. I was on the wrong track. I wasn't going to help us if I stayed on that track.
No, I get it.
Every one of us felt he was just a remarkable leader for us. And it's kind of, you know, what would Jesus do? Little wristbands. We keep thinking, what would Jerry do? And as I manage teams, I tell you, that's where I went 90% of the time, and it served me really well.
That is awesome. Well, Chris, if it just kind of to wrap it up a little bit, what would you advise people to do? You know, the top two or three things that they need to think about. What would you say, take away this?
Well, I think I would start with that servant leadership overview, is that mm-hmm. all leadership is really about getting others inspired towards some desired end mm-hmm. and applying their skills and applying their passion.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a leader once tell me, he said, you know, I've been working with him for a couple of years, he said, I used to see my job as managing results and processes. And now I see my job as managing people's energy.
Awesome.
So there really is a sense of needing to be aware of how people are feeling, how they're, do they treat each other well? Do they treat each other nicely? I think that's the second piece, is that whole idea of paying as much attention to the way people interact and are operating as to, you know, how they're performing. And the last thing is, there's really no reason to degrade. The I win, you lose thing is a very short-term thinking kind of a piece. And if you really want to inspire people to do great things and to go above and beyond, you're not going to get there by degrading them and by discounting them. And so it's kind of the be nice approach. And if we think about our best bosses, that's where they were.
That is awesome. I couldn't agree more. And just thank you for those tips for us.
Yes,
well, everybody, our guest today, Mr. Chris Edmonds, you can find him on his website, drivingresultsthroughculture.com. I'll make sure that we put a link in the post so that you can easily get there. Chris, do you have any other ways that you would like for people to connect with you?
Absolutely. I'm very active on Twitter, kind of in my old age, getting excited about learning about social media and those platforms and the power behind those. So I'm on Facebook at Driving Results Through Culture, also on Twitter at SC Edmonds. That's all one word. So do a search there. Would love to interact with you there.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom today, and I hope you don't get too snowed in this weekend.
We'll dig ourselves out. It's going to be quite a different weekend than you're going to face there in Phoenix.
Yeah, that's an awesome thing. Listen, congratulations on the new book.
Thank you.
Tell us again how we can get a copy, and just so that everybody will hear that.
Yes, absolutely. You can go to the book's home on the web. It's theCultureEngine.com, and you can get a free sample chapter. And, of course, it's available in all your favorite online bookstores and a bunch of brick-and-mortar stores as well.
And
book's titled The Culture Engine.
Yep. As a matter of fact, we'll put a link in the article to that to make it really simple for everybody.
Awesome.
All right. Well, Chris, thank you very much for your wisdom today. Thank you for giving us a different perspective on employee engagement, and best wishes in all of your endeavors in the future.
Thanks very much. So appreciate the chance to learn about Manager Mojo with you, sir.
You bet. Thank you so much.
All righty.
Thanks for being a part of the Manager Mojo audience. I really appreciate it, and I'd love to hear from you. Please let me know your suggestions by emailing me at steve@managermojo.com.